Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks on this Friday, June 6th, 2025. Tom, the 81st anniversary of the Allied landings at Normandy, France. Tom, take a guess. Maybe you know already. How many troops landed that day? How many Allied troops?
Well, the initial was probably around 100, 150,000.
It was 156,000 men that landed at Normandy. So it's pretty amazing in one day all that was going on there. But anyway, we mark that occasion, 81 years. All right, we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, part of the Bustos Media Center here in central Tucson. I say that because when I say we're in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio, many people say, Bill, how is it out there broadcasting from Green Things? No, we're not out at Green Things, but they have the naming rights to our studio. Some days I wish I was out at Green Things. But anyway, we have five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for live news and talk, our 15th year now. I'm 14 and a half years into the radio show, 37th year in Tucson radio and TV. Worldwide live listening at buckmastershow.com. All of our podcasts, including the first week that goes back to January of 2011. Pretty much every show we have done is archived there. And when we do our telephone interviews, a live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Some media shout-outs, TucsonSentinel.com, great supporters. Dylan Smith, and one of Dylan's top reporters, is with us. Tucson Sentinel senior reporter, Paul Ingram. Thanks,
good
Paul.
Afternoon.
Good to see you, and thanks for everything you and the Sentinel team are doing.
Appreciate it.
Also, Green Valley News and Sal Rita Sun, a shout-out to Dan Scheer and his team, and then Tucson Spotlight is now also one of our supporters. Our Friday Focus interview today, former longtime Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek, who since January has led the Pima Animal Care Center. Councilman, Director, Steve, how are you
Steve
doing?
Steve is probably fine, yeah. So 81 years. Did I hear Tom say, and it seems like only yesterday when you said that?
Yeah, 81 years. Isn't that something?
It's crazy. I would have said 45,000. I would never have guessed 156.
Yeah, all those folks. You know, Steve, we did have you on the show on our Friday Focus interview a couple of weeks after you had taken over. How does it feel? How's the job? How's the car running, as they say?
It is a challenge every day. I'm enjoying the work. It is rewarding in multiple different levels. And yet there are challenges every day that, frankly, are not of our own making. And so that makes it even more difficult to get your arms around solutions. I've shared with the county administration folks multiple times that we are simply playing the hand that the community has dealt us. We are the only open admission shelter in all 9,200 square miles of Pima County. So we are responsible for intake from all parts of the county. The shelter was built to house roughly 235 dogs. Today we have over 530. We have over 100 cats, and it's kitten season, and so we have a full nursery across the way. So there are challenges built into the work. There's a lot of emotion that people bring to the table. People love their animals, as I do. And so we are, every day is fraught with emotion and with people out here, though, who are committed to making sure that we're standing on a kind of a three-legged stool. One, the people out here are mostly concerned about the humane treatment of the animals, whether they're in the shelter or out in the community. We also have an obligation to the safety of the public and the safety of our staff. So we're juggling some balls, but I think we're doing some good things.
You know, going back to the building that shelter, the Pima Animal Care Center, I'm going to guess it was 10 or 11 years ago. Maybe it seems like only yesterday, but when they designed that 235 dogs, you kind of wonder what's changed over the years that you guys now, run a typical day is double that capacity.
Yeah, so Sadly, what we know is happening out in the community is that people do not spay and neuter their animals. They, in many parts of the community, do not confine their animals appropriately. They don't vaccinate the animals. They don't microchip their animals. So when we get them out here, 57% of the dogs that we get in are strays. And sadly, only about 15% of them have been microchipped. And so, you know, people have, there's plenty that people can do from a responsible pet ownership standpoint to protect their animal and make sure that they do not wind up in the shelter. And if they wind up out here as a stray and they're not microchipped and we can't find the owner, then they're going to sit in a kennel until someone adopts them or fosters them.
Here's Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com. Paul?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think is sort of striking is for the last couple of years is that you guys have, the pack has gone through and really kind of extended towards doing more fosters, doing more, they have the Spanish language campaign. You also have been doing free spay and neuter programs. You have the vet clinic. It seems like you've done a lot of proactive responses, but is there something more that you think pack can do to kind of mitigate the overcapacity that you've had?
Well, hi, Paul. It's good to talk to you again.
Good to see you.
We are out in the community so far this year. We have what's called a mobile medical unit. It's a Friends of Pack paid for it, and we have been out in the community 24 times since January 1st with that, and we have touched over 3,100 animals, and that is spay and neuters, it's wellness checks, it's vaccines, it's microchipping. So one of my focuses is that we can do only so much here in the clinic and in the shelter itself, but to your point, getting out into the community and touching the public out where they are, I think, is what we need to do. And so that's something that I'm really working on. We just had a donor step up last week and fund a very large generator, so that we can take the mobile medical unit out into the community, even when it's 110 degrees out, and do all the surgeries that we can do in the unit. Even when it's hot outside. So I believe that, you know, we need to be out in the community more often. Now, I have to put an asterisk next to that statement, though, because when we go out there, they're 12 to 14-hour days for our staff. And so it's not like we can send them out there 7 days a week or even 5 days a week. But to the extent that we can get out in the community, and we know where some of the hot spots are and when where some of the some of the underserved parts of the community are. You mentioned the Spanish language campaign. That came about as a result of our doing some data analysis and looking at zip codes. And we know that there are five zip codes that we're targeting right now, largely in the southwest side of town, and that's the reason we're calling it the Spanish language campaign, where there are a lot of people who English is not their first tongue. And so we're out there doing the outreach in those areas, trying to socialize, trying to educate the folks. You know, this is what microchipping is about. This is what spay and neuter is about. We don't want you creating more litters of puppies or cats. We don't need them. And frankly, one other thing that near to my heart anyway is if we could get some legislative changes that would draw some proscriptions around backyard breeding and puppy mills and how retail outlets source their animals, we could go a long way to curbing some of the excessive number of animals we have in the community.
Yeah, it wasn't several years ago there was going to be a movement through the legislature to actually create a stricter license for breeding that would kind of limit the number of dogs that you could have. And if you had beyond that amount, you had to have a license. And then there was more fines that were attached to that. Do you have a sense of where maybe that legislation kind of went and maybe why it hasn't come through?
Yeah, in fact, I'll even go one better. In 2014, we had adopted at the Tucson City Council a puppy mill ordinance, and it was really pretty straightforward. What it said was that if you are selling dogs retail, you have to source them either through a rescue or through a shelter. And the an owner of a couple of the retail stores, both here in town and up in Phoenix, went and lobbied the legislature and I guess wrote big enough checks. And so the state legislature passed a preemptive law that said local jurisdictions can't pass puppy mill ordinances or sourcing ordinances that are more restrictive than state law, which is very, very lax. They have taken the position, they being the state legislature, that all things animal welfare are of statewide importance, and therefore local jurisdictions have their hands tied in terms of what they can do locally, whether that's the city council or the board of supervisors. I've recently advocated, since the county board of supervisors is putting together their legislative agenda for this session, that they once again try and get that preemption lifted. But there are other things that we want to do legislatively, and one is in terms of housing. There are right now fewer than 10% of rental units nationwide, and the same is true locally, that do not have breed restrictions or size restrictions or have excessive down payments for or rent for renting apartments. If you have
right,
an animal,
you have to put in a pet deposit that you have to do.
Deposit, so. The word I was groping for. Yeah. Yep. And so we have a program out here at PAC where we will help you with that pet deposit. But oftentimes, just the restrictions going in are making, when people are evicted or they're moving from apartment to apartment, the cost of entry is simply too high. So getting some of those laws in place, and I'm hopeful that both the city and the county will lead by example, and that when they buy up housing, they'll show that we're gonna work with a community that owns pets, because so many people do.
Go ahead. One thing that sort of strikes me too is, like, have you been over capacity for a while? Is there a way for PAC to actually add more capacity at this point, or are you really there's just a fundamental limit at this point?
Well, so here's the challenge. I mean, it sort of falls under the umbrella of build it and they will come.
Right.
We could add 1,000 kennels out here next week, and 3 weeks after that, they'd be full. One thing that I am working on, though, kind of to that end, is that we have over 50 horde cases out in the community, 54 horde cases right now that we simply are not getting to. The reason we can't is that if I ran the numbers on these, what we believe exists in these horde houses, if we brought them in next week, we would bring in over 800 dogs and over 200 cats.
Oh, my gosh.
We simply don't have the capacity. Now, those are not situations oftentimes where somebody's handling the 80 or 90 or 100 dogs that they have well. They're cruelty situations. They're neglect situations. They are also behavioral health situations. And so what I'm working with the health department on is to go out and address these horde situations one at a time, chip away at them, so that we can help the person from the behavioral health standpoint and manage the intake of the multiple numbers of animals they've got. But to your point, the other thing that I'm working on is getting a facility out here that we would set aside simply to house the animals that are involved in those horde situations, so they don't become a part of our census immediately, but that we work with rescues and we work the medical issues that they've got slowly and get them back out into homes, rehome them. But that would be a facility separate and distinct from the shelter that we're dealing with. So Paul, what we're dealing with is, as I said at the beginning, is the hand that the community's dealt us. And less than until people spay and neuter and confine and microchip and vaccinate their animals, we're going to be in a situation where we're overstuffed at the gills, and where when we have a situation where there's disease out in the community, distemper is very prevalent in certain parts of the community. Mm-hmm. Those dogs, when they come in here, if we have no isolation space, they're never going to make it off the truck. So it's a sad situation.
A listener asked Steve Kasachek about spay and neutering, and vaccines are expensive. Is there any financial relief available for folks?
Yeah, so a couple of answers to that. The short answer is yes, and here's how. Friends of PAC just opened up a low-cost veterinary clinic over at First Avenue in Glen. They've been open for a couple of months now, and any animal that is adopted out of PAC or fostered out of PAC, they're still ours, is eligible for low-cost veterinary treatment over at the Friends of PAC clinic, and they're up and running and good, you know, good for them. Also, we will any animal that leaves that is adopted out of PAC, we make sure that they're altered before they leave here.
One question I had for you, you said, especially with cats, I mean, there's been sort of a program to catch feral cats, to take them in, to neuter them and just release them again. Have you thought about expanding that program? Or, I mean, are there some limitations in actually doing that kind of work?
Well, the only limitations are in terms of the staffing, the manpower it takes to really pull it off. And we just last week, we scheduled another one of the TNR called the Snip and Tip event out here at PAC. We do two or three a year, and we see hundreds of cats every time we do them. So there is a hunger for that in the community. We recognize it, and we got another one of those Snip and Tips scheduled up for later in the year.
Yeah, I have to say your volunteers are pretty great in coming out to my neighborhood and helping us set traps, and we caught a few of them from a little cat colony that had formed up at a abandoned house for a short period of time. So
And so we don't want them in the shelter. They're feral. They're not socialized, and yet we're not inclined to go out and simply trap them and euthanize them, obviously. People are taking care of them at some level, and so as long as they come in here and we see that they're well fed and you know they're healthy, then we're fine with putting them back out where they came. Trap Neuter Return is a program that is very successful, and good for you for and your neighbors for participating.
Yeah, right. One of our cats actually is one of those cats.
Oh, there you go. All right,
Steve Kasacek, stick around for segment number two, and Paul Ingram sticks around, senior reporter at TucsonSentinel.com. Steve Kasacek, the director at Pima Animal Care, talking about animal welfare issues, and this community cares a lot about animals. We will be right back. It's Buckmaster on a Friday.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org. The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios, our Friday Focus interview. Steve Kasacek, former Tucson City Councilman, now heading up Pima Animal Care Center, where they have no shortage of animals. The census count is double pretty much for dogs than when the facility was originally built 10 or 12 years ago. Paul Ingram is here. Paul is the senior reporter for TucsonSentinel.com. Want to go back to this, the hoarders, 50, you say, 50 households. How do you determine where these hoarders are? Do you get tips or what's going on there, Steve Kasachek?
Yeah, there are 54. We have a people call in, they email in, they let us know that there's a situation. I mean, if your next door neighbor has 90 dogs, then you're going to know about it.
Yeah, right.
And so, yeah, we get people calling in. And more often than not, it's not, my next door neighbor's got, you know, 90 dogs or pick your number, which is a real number, by the way, of one that we're dealing with. It's a call about cruelty or neglect or maltreatment or undernourished, or, you know, they're seeing the dogs out in the elements, not under shelter. And so it's people not calling in just to complain about their neighbors, or they're calling in about the welfare of the animals. That's the reason, the primary reason in my world that we have to put eyes on that and address it. It's a neglect situation. It's the humane treatment of animals situation. We have 18 animal protection service officers, 18 APOs, who are responsible for 9,200 square miles. It is fundamentally unfair to them to say we're aware of these 54, but we're just but don't go out there because we don't have the capacity, we don't have the room to bring them in. And so that's one of the reasons I'm really working on getting an APS hoard facility out here at PAC. And I've got a couple of options that I'm working on right now that we can dedicate to simply addressing those situations. We chip away one at a time, but the number is only going to continue to get larger as long as we turn a blind eye to it. The other way that just call it an APS hoard tent or whatever it winds up being, would be useful, though, is that right now there are a couple of forest fires going on in the Catalinas, and we're getting ready for forest fire season. If I got a call from our director of the Office of Emergency Management tomorrow saying, we got to bring you 47 critters that, you know, from the fire, my answer would be we don't have any room. You know, we're stuffed. There's no room at the inn. And so that's another reason that I think it's important that we really work quickly on getting this facility up and running.
On the hoarder cases, I mean, you're fundamentally, it sounds like, not able to actually even engage with these cases. I mean, are there some where maybe, yeah, somebody's got 90 dogs, but maybe they just need some shade structures and maybe just some food that they could actually take care of these dogs? Or do you really think that you just really can't engage with these cases?
It's both and. Okay. And so where we have an opportunity to make contact with the owner and say, look, you know, we're going to work with you in terms of managed intake on these things. We can't take 90. You don't want to give up your 90. If it's, for instance, here's how it happens. There's a widow or a widower. Spouse dies, they get a couple of cats or a couple of dogs as their companion pets. They don't alter them. That 2 turns into 6, turns into 13, and all of a sudden it's out of control.
Right.
We will help them with food. We will help them with shelter. We have a program called our Safety Net program. We also have another one called Keeping Families Together that are funded by Friends of PAC, where we will go out and we will work with the homeowner, saying, look, we can't take them all at once. We're not going to take all of yours. We're going to leave your 2 or 3 favorite. They will be altered. And we have the health department come alongside us and try and work on the behavioral health issues that the folks are dealing with also. Another piece to this, another partner in this that I'm just bringing on, is I met with the executive director, the CEO over at Habitat for Humanity, and there's a community program called CHRPA, Community Home Repair, mm-hmm. And they're both nonprofits, and we're going to bring them into the mix too, so that if, for instance, another real example, a widower who was living in a trailer that had holes in the floorboard, the cats were getting in and out, and so we didn't have the ability really to go out there and do the work on her trailer while we're also doing the behavioral and occupational medical stuff. And so we're going to get some people to go out to help us with you know, kind of making the physical improvements, you know, fix the fence so the animals can't get in and out, they're confined, and then help build shelters. So it's really a combination of a lot of different factors. And when I started this, I looked into what other areas in the country were doing in terms of combining the behavioral health and the animal welfare components. And really nobody's doing it. And it's simply a matter of go confiscate the hoard and impound it and deal with it and deal with it. The reoccurrence later on, because the person will go out and begin again. And hoarding is a treatable mental situation, the same way drug addictions and betting addictions are. And so it's a matter of getting the right people in the conversation, and I think we've got that team built up.
All right, Steve Kasacek, let's talk about a very difficult subject that you have to deal with every day. Which animals, how many are put down?
Well, we have there's not a check the box, flip the switch kind of a calculation that goes into that. We consider the animal's medical history. We consider the animal's bite history, its behavioral history, its length of stay, how long it's been here. We combine all those factors together. We have a group out here. Our behavior team, our veterinary team, our animal protection service team, and our intake team, who will work together as a group to go through the dogs that we've had that really are probably not highly adoptable, and for any of the reasons that I just mentioned, and they'll make a determination as to how many we put down. How many we're probably putting down 5 to 10 a week ish. Very round numbers. Nobody wants to be euthanizing animals, but I mentioned a few minutes ago that we have a three-pronged obligation. One is to the humane treatment of the animals. If you have animals double bunked in kennels for 100, 200 days, that's hardly humane. So that's one consideration. We also have an obligation to the safety of our staff and volunteers. When they're moving highly amped up dogs around from kennel to kennel and out to play yards and they get bitten, that's an obligation we have to consider to the safety of our staff and volunteers. And finally, to the safety of the public. If we have an animal that's been here for, 100 days and has it got a bite history, is it responsible behavior for us to put that animal back out into the community? So, Bill, there are a lot of factors that go into that determination. And nobody's happy about when we say these 10 dogs have got to be put down, but it's part of the responsibility that we have as an open admission shelter that everything's not going to wind up going back out in the community.
One question too that I had was, why do people surrender their dogs? Like, what are the factors that you see when people are taking their dogs and bringing them to you and saying, I need to give this dog up? Or cats, for that matter, too.
Yeah, and it's more often dogs, but it is cats as well. And that's a great question. And oftentimes it's, I'm being evicted. I just lost my job. I have a medical situation that I'm confronting. I'm going to be in the hospital for X amount of time. I'm a homeless person. I'm going through detox. I have to give my pet up. We have a couple of programs that our safety net program and our Keeping Families Together program and our foster program can all help people. We don't want their dog or cat here in the shelter. We want to find a way to keep it in the family. And so, for instance, through the safety net program or the KFT program or the foster program, we can temporarily house that dog or cat in a foster situation, if that's what they need, if they're between jobs or between apartments, and if they're going through detox or whatever it winds up, whether another medical procedure, guaranteeing that you'll get the animal back when you're back on your feet. If it's a situation where they're running short on cash and it's a question of buying my medicine, my medication, or feeding my animal, we'll give them food. We'll do what we can to make sure that we can keep those animals in the homes. And if that means giving food, building fences, providing crates, or providing temporary foster situation, we'll do that with them, because the last thing we want is for them to wind up here in the shelter.
How do you think you would manage success for these programs? I mean, there's a very easy thing of, we just have fewer dogs in the shelter, but is that the only way we'd know how are we being successful in all these things?
In those programs?
In any of those programs, yeah.
Well, we know real time when somebody walks out of here with a 10-pound bag of dog food that that the alternative was for them to own or surrender the dog here. We know that that's a win. We know it's a win when somebody is going into TMC for pick your medical procedure and we found a foster for that person for 6 weeks and then they're going to get their animal back. So we can count the wins real time when someone walks out the door knowing that either the animal's still in their home or that it's going to come back when they're done with their medical situation. What is not a win is when we have somebody who has been backyard breeding their animals, and we get literally 14 puppies at a time that they're not able to take care of, and now we have to find homes for them, and that's not a win. And so our situation has got multiple factors that are all community driven. We're not out here breeding litters of puppies and kittens. We're out here dealing with the fallout of when the community does that. We really need the community to step up and be partners in altering animals, in confining animals, in vaccinating animals, in microchipping animals, so that when and if they are stray, they're not coming in here with distemper or parvo, and they are coming in here with a microchip so that we can pick up the phone and find the owner and get them back home that same day and not even ever become a member of the census of the pack population.
What about animals that are not on leashes in our parks, Steve Kasachek?
So we have our APS unit has about 1,700 calls right now that are backlogged. Many of those are aggressive animals. Many of them are cruelty or neglect, the kinds of things we were talking about in the hoarding. We have about 900 calls right now that are simply calls about people walking their dogs off leash in parks. We're not going to get to those because they're not a priority, but they're important. And so what we've done here recently, and just today, we had the team out in Udall Park. We formed a volunteer group that is working under the umbrella of our APS unit. They're volunteers who are going out in shirts that say Neighborhood Pack, Neighborhood Resource Team, and they're going out with leashes and with information about leash laws, with treats for the dogs, with activity books for kids. So what this group is doing is they're approaching people who are walking their animals off leash in parks. They're not out there writing citations. They're not deputized for that. It's an educational group trying to get people to comply with the law so that everybody can use the parks and our green spaces with their animals and not have to worry about some dog charging at them from across the way. And Bill, this is not just simply a matter of overly aggressive dogs charging and attacking another dog. Mm-hmm. We had a situation just today where one of the women who was interviewed said a dog ran up to a friend of mine. It was just a friendly dog jumping up and trying to play and knock this old elderly lady over, and she was injured. Yeah. You're responsible for that. That is a possible conviction for you and a civil lawsuit for you if your dog is just trying to be friendly and knocks somebody over and hurts them. So this is it's important for everyone's safety and the animal's safety as well. So they're out there now. We started this a few weeks ago, and we're going to get them out a couple days a week. And we're recruiting volunteers to participate in this program as well. So, give us a call out here at PAC if you want to participate in that.
Do you think that maybe that's a sign that there's just not enough dog parks? There's not enough spaces for people to have their dogs and kind of let them be dogs for a little while? Or do you think people just don't realize that they should have their dogs on leashes when they're at parks?
I think it's both. We have a lot of dog parks, and one of the things that our volunteer unit is doing as informationally is a map that they're handing to people to show them where the dog parks are. But frankly, I think people are just, they're going to do what's most convenient for them. And if I've got a pocket park a block from my house and I want to let Fido run around in the morning before I go to work, that's what I'm going to do. And so that's the reason we're out there.
All right. Before we go, give us what's your situation on adoption. Let's try to, maybe somebody's thinking about adoption. How does it work, Steve Kasachek?
Yeah, we're open 7 days a week from noon till 7 Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, 1:30 to 7 on Wednesdays, 10 to 5 on weekends. And we have a staff out here that would just love to send you home with a new family member, whether it's a dog or a cat. It's kitten season. It's puppy season. We've got all kinds of dogs, all sizes of dogs and cats. And our team is out here ready to have people walk in and walk out of here with a new member, new family member.
And you also have a really good foster system as well.
We have, so I mentioned that we have about 530 dogs here in the shelter. We have over 800 out in foster.
Wow.
And so if you want to foster an animal, you don't have to do it for the long term. You can take an animal home over the weekend, take it home as a pajama party overnight. We have a park that's 100 yards away from us. You can take them out and walk them through the park for a couple of hours. So, yeah, we have a foster program that's great, and we love it. We love it when people get them out of the shelter for whatever amount of time it is, decompress them, bring them back in. They're a completely different animal. You see them in completely different personality when they're out of here.
And what is your location for folks that are not familiar where you're located?
We're at the intersection of Sweetwater and Silverbell, 4000 North Silverbell, and there's a stoplight. You're heading south on Silverbell. You make a right-hand turn at that stoplight, and you're right in our parking lot.
And, of course, none of this would be possible, these programs, without funding and the Pima Animal Care, the Friends of PAC. Without them, you'd be in a world of hurt, wouldn't you, Steve Kasachek?
Yeah, Friends of PAC is our lifeline. They are our 501c partner, and they have funded the mobile medical unit. They're funding the KF, Keeping Families Together, the safety net programs. They're doing so many great things. They're doing some funding some veterinarian staff out here in our clinic, and as I mentioned, they've opened up their own clinic. So yeah, we need Friends of PAC, or we're a sinking ship.
Is this the most satisfying work you have done in your career?
I would say yes, and challenging, because everybody loves their pets. There is emotion built into this. People are passionate. I wish there were a more effective way for us to get the community to engage and to be partners in this work, as opposed to having to pick up the debris, figuratively. And literally, but figuratively, that they've left at our doorstep. But that's an educational piece that we're working on. That Spanish language program is a work in progress. The parks unit is a work in progress, and we're just going to keep expanding what we can do in the community from an educational standpoint, because we need the community's participation, and we need the legislature's participation to help ease the load that we've got out here, because we can't do it alone.
All right, Steve Kasachek, Director of Pima Animal Care Center. Thank you. Good catching up with you, Steve.
Thanks, Bill and Paul. It's great talking to you both.
Good talking to you, too.
Thank you very much. Coming up next, it will be Segment 3. Segment 3, we carve out a little time with our guest media co-host. It's Paul Ingram today, senior reporter for TucsonSentinel.com, and one of Paul's areas of specialty that he covers is immigration. So there's a lot to talk about there. We will talk about it after a short break. Be back with you Friday on Buckmaster.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Thanks to Steve Kasachek, director of Pima Animal Care. Ran out of time. Paul Ingram is with me, senior reporter for TucsonSentinel.com. We actually had had a question, Paul, that didn't get really a chance to get to address with Steve K about javelinas, but that's game and fish.
Right.
And, you know, we didn't really get into what about large animals? How large an animal can they take or, you know?
It just occurred to me that they sometimes have had hoarding cases involving horses. And those aren't at PAC.
No. No. Anyway, there's some great animals out there, and give it a try. Drop by PAC and see what, I'm sure you'll find a forever home, or hopefully a forever pet. Paul Ingram, one of the areas that you specialize covering immigration, you were down by the border. There's an area, I think it's about 30 miles of border east of Nogales that has not been fenced, but that might be coming up very soon.
Yeah, it's definitely coming. I mean, yesterday, the Homeland Security Secretary, Kristi Noem, did a waiver for about 33 miles of border wall. And so under a law that was passed in 2005, the Homeland Security Secretary is allowed to waive a couple dozen environmental laws about, you know, usually guides kind of federal programs. We don't have to worry about those. We can just build it regardless of those. And so that waiver is kind of the first step in building this project. So we've known about this project for a little while. May, I reported there was going to be about 25 miles. It's very clear that they're expanding this program. Customs and Border Protection started laying out what they were going to do, talking to environmentalists, also Sheriff David Hathaway, who's the sheriff of Santa Cruz, and kind of laying out how they would actually build this wall. And so the wall is really going to run from east of Nogales and run all the way along across the border through the San Rafael Valley and end in the Coronado National Forest. So if you know about the Arizona Trail, the kind of end of the Arizona Trail, that's going to be included in a no border wall. So it's not clear to me you're going to be able to do the actual full Arizona Trail anymore because of this project. Yeah. The biggest issue is the San Rafael Valley. This is considered by environmentalists a gem. It's an area where the three jaguars have been spotted in Arizona. That's pretty clear. This is the area where they've kind of come through from Mexico into Arizona. And so over the weekend, there was a group of environmentalists and advocates who had a kind of celebration of the borderlands in Loquillo, which is a really interesting, it's used to be a port of entry in the 80s. It's mostly just a ranching community. And one thing that was kind of great is a bunch of people showed up and they shared food and they shared art. They did kind of a demonstration where they made a bunch of kind of cardboard birds, and really to kind of symbolize the change that the environment comes. One thing is very difficult to kind of think about is, you know, when the walls are huge, the new wall is huge. It's a 30-foot high wall. It also includes, of course, roads and infrastructure that usually builds in. So it tends to carve out a pretty big scar across the landscape whenever they build these things. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues is that for species that are used to crossing the border, because, you know, from their point of view, the border doesn't matter. Right. All these species, of course, they get kind of cut off. And, you know, it's pretty easy to understand antelope. I mean, when you have a 30-foot fence in front of you, the antelope can come. It makes sense for the jaguars. It makes sense for bears. Mm-hmm. But it also really affects birds. It affects butterflies. It affects other kinds of insects, because since it's this zone of nothing, it means that species tend not to cross. And so there's a really big concern about what this means if all of Arizona has a border wall, what that means for all these species that are used to coming up through Sonora and then going all the way to Canada, what happens to them. We don't know, actually, in a lot of ways what that means. But anyway, on the weekend, we held a kind of a celebration. There was some carne asada. There was some food. Lots of people sort of there. Lots of music. It was actually really interesting. And, of course, I camped for the night and woke up to rain from the first rainstorm that we've had here in a good long while.
And it may be the last time in your lifetime you'll ever see rain on June 1st.
Yeah, maybe. That's very true.
So how much of the Arizona border is it now has fencing or other
almost
way you
all
could
of, almost all of it. Yeah, so. A significant chunk of it. During the Trump administration, they built about 245 miles of border wall. And one thing to keep in mind, I mean, we've had border walls since the Clinton administration. The Clinton administration built border wall. The Bush administration built a lot of border wall. Then the Obama administration built some. We've really just been continuously sealing up parts of the border. We've also been making the fencing higher and higher and more difficult to cross. You'll see a big difference from the fencing that was built during the Clinton administration, which was kind of made of like panels of metal. And then this has been replaced by these really big tall bollards that are 3 feet high.
Mm-hmm. Quick question, and we are out of time, but since I'm the quarterback of the program, I'll make an executive decision. Are we having many immigration roundups? This doesn't seem like we are having the high visibility that other communities across the country are having.
No, we've definitely had targeted arrests of ones and twos, but we haven't seen any of the kind of big arrests. We haven't seen the big arrests at like construction sites, things like that yet.
Mm-hmm. And for folks that don't know about TucsonSentinel.com, tell us a little bit about how they can find out about the work you guys are doing.
I mean, of course, you can follow us on any kind of social media. We're on all of them. We're TucsonSentinel.com. You can, of course, come to our website, which is just TucsonSentinel.com. We do our work there. We've been a nonprofit news organization for a good while now. I've been working there since 2014, and we try to do a lot of work. We've got some really great reporters really doing interesting stuff, and we also do a lot of feed from wire services. So there's a lot to read and engage with, and we try to go out and really engage with the community and write about stories that we think people will care about.
So just Google Tucson Sentinel.
Tucson Sentinel, yep, exactly.
And there'll be no charge to take a look at this
site. We do
not
have a paywall, so you can read every story that you want to your heart's content for free. If you want to give us a donation, you certainly can, and we appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Paul Ingram, for the work you're doing.
Thank you.
TucsonSentinel.com. All right, Paul Ingram, we thank you, and we thank Steve Kasachek as our Friday Focus interview. Coming up next, some great tips on what to do this weekend from our sister station, 101.7 The Drive, and we'll hear from Leslie right after this.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at FlyingLeapVineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com.
Time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Start planning now for an enchanting getaway in, appropriately enough, the Land of Enchantment. Silver City in Grant County, it's an easy 3-hour drive east of Tucson. Hit I-10, then take a left at Lordsburg, and then go up the mountain to about 5,000 to 7,000 foot elevation. And wow, what a difference elevation can make.
There we go.
Sorry to interrupt. Gentry.
I got to talk about, real quick, Silver City.
I'd love to hear it. With the folks over there, they'd love to hear your endorsement.
Well, I lived in New Mexico for 25 years. The first time I went to Silver City, mm-hmm. I was actually mad at myself for never going there before. Uh-huh. I fell in love with it.
Wow.
It's a little gem. And it is worth a 3.5-hour drive, let me tell you.
All right. That's the testimonial of the well-known morning guy on 101.7, The Drive, Matt Gentry. And Matt, before we turn it over to you for some great tips, it is easy, as you say, it's about a 3.5-hour drive. And start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Matt, always great to see you. What's going on this weekend?
A lot of stuff going on this weekend. I want to talk about things coming up. Specifically Saturday, June 26th.
Okay.
It's Tucson Saguaros baseball. I'm a huge baseball fan. So baseball season's going to be happening very soon for Tucson Saguaros, but that's happening in a couple weeks. As far as this weekend, how about $5? This is happening today. Tucson Botanical Gardens, $5 admission.
That's a buy.
That's incredibly good. Tucson Botanical Gardens, take advantage of that. Also, Summer Fridays at Lodge on the Desert. That's always a good time.
Mm-hmm.
They are playing the movie Despicable Me on the lawn. It's a fun time all the way around. Details on that you can find online for sure. Cool summer nights, of course, Desert Museum. And then paint and sip at Hoppy Vines. This is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You can turn vintage vinyl records into art. You got to check it out to experience it. Paint and sip. So you make pictures, you paint, and you sip wine.
Oh, that's cool.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So, and that's at the Hoppy Vine. That's a pretty cool place.
Yeah. So you mentioned the Saguaros baseball. What is that? What's that about?
It's like our farm team. It's the Pecos League baseball games. It's the Pecos League.
Huh.
So they're going to be, they play, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like 8 games.
Mm-hmm.
And but I'm a huge baseball fan.
And where does that come from, this being you, this huge baseball fan? Why are you a big baseball fan?
I played baseball for 40 years.
Really?
What
position?
Pitcher.
Oh.
Yeah, I probably could have done some well if I had had some good direction when I was in high school.
Yeah.
But I went to high school in a little old farm town up in Northern California, so there wasn't a lot of scouting going on.
What town was that?
That was in Livingston, California.
Wow. I've heard of Livingston. Not quite sure where it is.
San Joaquin Valley. It's near Modesto. Yeah. Near Modesto?
Okay, sure. Yeah. I worked in Visalia early in my career.
Really?
Yeah, in the same.
Where haven't you worked, Bill?
I've worked all over the place.
Amazing.
What was it? The first 5 years of our marriage, I think we moved every year.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the radio and TV business.
It really is.
at least that's the way it used to be. All right. Quick shout out to you guys doing a Monday remote. You've got about 5 seconds.
Yeah. Monday remote. We're going to be at Roadies, the new entertainment destination, Grant and Swan, inside Roadhouse Cinemas.
Very cool. Thank you, Matt Gentry. We'll listen for your work, of course, mornings on the drive. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, wholly responsible for the content of our program. Bill and Matt and Tom all wishing everybody a great weekend.